All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So our topic for tonight is Haggadah Insights, with the goal of trying to take some of the things that we're all very familiar with, but perhaps to just infuse a little bit additional meaning into it. So first of all, we have to we dedicate our learning tonight, Nebuch, in memory of the six members of the Shar family, of Guy Shar and his children Eliav, Avitar, Amitai, Shira, and Itamar, who were tragically killed in the fire in Rehovot just 2 days ago. And we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, these neshamos have an aliyah. Okay, so we begin with an interesting Gemara in number one. The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim, Omer Rava, Matzah Bizman Hazed Da'oraisa, Umarur D'Rabbanan. So Rava says that matzah in this contemporary time is a biblical mitzvah, but maror is rabbinic. So the Gemara says, Umashna maror, why is it that maror is only rabbinic? Dichsiv amatzos umirorim yochlu. Bizman de'ika pesach, yesh maror. Ubizman de'leka pesach, leka maror. So the Gemara says the fact that the Torah links Pesach, maror to carbon pesach, tells us that when there's a carbon pesach, there's an obligation of maror. When there's no carbon pesach, there's no obligation of maror. But says the Gemara, matzanami haksiva matzos umirorin. But 1 second, using that logic, the Torah also mentions the mitzvah of matzah in conjunction with the carbon pesach. So therefore, why don't you make the same argument that whenever there's a carbon pesach, there's an obligation of matzah, the absence of a carbon pesach, no matzah. To which the Gemara says, matzah mehadar hadar beikra. When it comes to matzah, the Torah goes out of its way to repeat the obligation, ba'erev tochlu matzos. So as opposed to maror, which is only mentioned in conjunction with Pesach, with Karban Pesach, matzah is mentioned in conjunction with the Karban, but is also mentioned independently. The Gemara understands that repetition of the mitzvah matzah to teach us that the mitzvah of matzah applies when there is a Karban Pesach and also applies biblically in the absence of a Karban Pesach. Now you're going to see why this is important, but at least the take-home message right now is that when it comes to the Seder, we really only have one biblical mitzvah on the night of the Seder, and that is matzah. Maror is rabbinic. The four cups are obviously rabbinic. Everything else that... I'm sorry? Oh, so Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, right. So the mitzvah of telling the Exodus story is certainly biblical as well. Correct. So now, this will help frame the next conversation. Take a look at number two. Says the Gemara, Disanyo, Omru Alov Al Hilo. They said about Hilo the following, Shahaya Karchan Bivas Achas Va'ochlan. That Hilo, now Karchan literally means what? Wrap. You know, it's interesting. Someone just showed me an advertisement this past week, that you can now buy soft matzos. Soft matzos. So by Sfardim, this is not a new thing, but now they're actually marketing it to the Ashkenazic consumer as well. I don't know how much it is a pound, but soft matzos. So Rav Soloveitchik, I think I mentioned this in one of the past shiurim, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that it's clear in the times of the Gemara that they used soft matzos. And the Rav's raya's proof to that is this very Gemara. The fact that the Gemara used the lotion of karchan means to wrap. So we'll know, we're going to talk about the Hillel sandwich in just a little bit. The Hillel sandwich in our day and age, I mean, it's a culinary catastrophe. I'm saying, you know, you're holding this, you're balancing it, it's coming apart as everybody's running, you're beating the clock. If somebody could only video it, I have no question it would be a bestseller. So, but we're leaving that aside. So they're trying to market this towards Ashkenazim as well, which is interesting. Just, I don't know the recipe, but somehow they do it, then it's kashrut l'Pesach. It's interesting. So some of the contemporary poskim write about this idea that even if it's kosher to Pesach, it just seems wrong because it's in direct contradiction to what our tradition is. And so it's interesting. It's not our topic for tonight, but it's one of those interesting discussions when halacha kind of collides with tradition. Halacha might allow for A, but A is not in conformance with what the tradition has been until now. How do you reconcile those two things? Okay, but like I said, not our topic for tonight. In any event, the Gemara says, Hillel would karchan. He would wrap together all of these things at once and he would eat them. What are all of these things? Right? Remember, it's important to understand, Hillel lived in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. There was a Beis HaMikdash. He didn't live in a peaceful time. He didn't live in a harmonious time. But there was a standing temple. It was actually during Hillel's days that Herod makes the massive extension of the temple. So when it says that Hillel ate everything together, he was eating Karban Pesach, he was eating Matzah, and he was eating Maror altogether. Shine Emar, where does Hillel get this from? Al Matzos Umarorim Yochluhu. Because Hillel takes the verse quite literally that the Pasuk says when speaking about the Karban Pesach. How do you eat it? Al Matzos Umarorim. You eat it with Matin, eating with Maror. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Cholkin Alav Chaver VaHillel. Rabbi Yochanan says Hillel's friends vehemently disagreed with him. Why? Disanya. His friends said, Yachol Yehu Karchem Bavas Achas VaOchlin Kederach Shehila Ochlan. One might have thought that maybe you should put all the ingredients together and eat them as Hillel ate them. Talmud Lomar Amatzus Mam Yochlu Afilu Zebifne Atzmo VZebifne Atzmo. So the other rabbis disagree with him. They say no. Amatzus Mam Yochlu means what? That you're supposed to eat all of these things over the course of the evening, but it doesn't require what? It doesn't require for you to eat them together. Maskifle Rav Ashi ihachi mayafilu ela Amar Rav Ashi high tana hachi katani. I'm just going to skip a line. Yochelo yatze behu yedei chavase elim kein karchem bevasachas ochlon kederach shehila ochlon tamud lomar amatzos umerom yochlu afilu zebifne asmo vezebifne atzmo. So what it comes down to is that Hillel and his peers have a fundamental dispute as to how to understand a pasuk. The Torah says when referring to the Karban Pesach, amatzos umerorim yochluhu. You will eat it with matzah and maror. So the question is, what does that mean? Hillel takes a literal interpretation and says they all have to be eaten together. The other rabbis say it means you have to eat them all over the course of the evening, but not together. Yes?
So why is there a share of the Karban? If it's a dispute.
Why is... Oh, so look at the next line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, well, here's one of those interesting Gemaras where the Gemara doesn't seem to reach a conclusion. Right? So I mean, who's right? Who's right? So the Gemara says, Hashta, Dilo Itmar Hilchas Alokei Hillel Veloke Rabbanon. So now that the Gemara doesn't decide, is Hillel right? Are the rabbis right? So what do we do? What do we do? We do everything. Therefore, here's the progression. Mevarich al achilas matzah va'achel. The first thing we do is, we eat matzah. What we call in the Seder, motzi matzah. Motzi matzah. So first thing we do is we eat a kezayis of matzah. And then after that, v'hadr mevarich al achilas maror v'achil. And then what do we do after that? We eat a kezayis of maror. And then what do we do after that? V'hadr achil matzah v'chasa b'hadi hadadi below bracha. And then we go back and eat matzah and maror together. Again, the Gemara uses chasa over here, because just as an aside, in the Talmudic hierarchy of the items to use for maror, chasa, lettuce, is the best. Interesting machlokes, is the Gemara referring to romaine lettuce? Is it referring to iceberg lettuce? What kind of lettuce? Not a topic for tonight. But it is interesting that Chazal felt that the easiest maror to eat the requisite amount of would be some type of lettuce. So therefore the Gemara says, after we eat our matzah, and after we eat our maror, we go back and eat everything together. Below bracha, we don't make an additional bracha. Why? Zecher lemikdash kehillel. And we do this as a remembrance to the temple of Hillel. So, yes? Correct. That's the Mar imagery. Correct. Good. It very much mirrors the slavery dynamic of Egypt. Correct. So, Zichel HaMikdash Kehillel. Okay, and in fact we know that if you take a look at number 3, here's just a copy of the Haggadah. This, in fact, is exactly what we do at our Seder. We go ahead and we eat a kezayis of matzah. Then afterwards, we eat a kezayis of maror. Then we put together, as we called before, right? Well, you've heard this term here, right? Our culinary catastrophe of Korech, right? We put it all together. We bring it all together. And we actually say these words. Zecher lemikdash kehillel. We're eating this in remembrance of the temple of Hillel, or like Hillel. Kein asa Hillel bezmash ve'es medesh hayakayom. This is what Hillel did when the temple stood. Hayakorech Pesach matzah umaror va'ochel biyachad. He would wrap everything together and eat it together. L'kayma shene'emar amatzos umerorim yochluhu. Because Hillel felt that this was the proper fulfillment of the biblical verse of amatzos umerorim yochluhu. Now, here's what's interesting about this. Is Hillel's practice is really a result of having what? I'm sorry, soft knots, all right. Let's get away from the soft knots now, people. All right, so now, Hillel's practice is contingent on having what? Carbon Pesach. Right, remember, the whole essence of Hillel's approach is all about the idea of how you eat the Karban Pesach. That's their fundamental dispute between Hillel and Chachamim, is how do you eat Karban Pesach? The Chachamim say, you eat Karban Pesach, you can eat it by itself. Now, by the way, according to Chachamim, if you choose to eat it as a sandwich, maybe you can as well, we'll discuss that, but you could eat them separately. Hillel is saying the way to eat the Karban Pesach is in sandwich form, which is intriguing, because then according to Hillel, what happens in the absence of a Karban Pesach? There should not be any concept of the Hillel sandwich. There should not be any concept of Korech in the absence of the Karban Pesach. Because remember, if you ask Hillel, if there's no Karban Pesach, how do I eat my matzah and my morah? What will Hillel tell you? Separately. You eat matzah, you eat morah. Unfortunately, we don't yet have the Karban Pesach. Okay, so it's missing. But here's what's exceptionally intriguing. Despite the fact that even Hillel himself would have said that in the absence of a Karban Pesach, you don't have to eat them together. Nevertheless, what do? We still eat it together. We still eat it, I'm sorry? In his memory, right? We still eat it together to recreate that which Hillel did, even though if you asked Hillel the actual halachic question of whether or not this is necessary, so Hillel would say, it's not necessary, but nevertheless, we still do it. So the simple understanding of this practice, of why we do it, despite the fact that in the absence of the Karban Pesach, even Hillel would deem the sandwich unnecessary, is number four. So the Rosh Rabbeinu Asher, one of the earliest codifiers of Halacha, the Rosh, interestingly enough, was the Talmud Mufak, who was the primary disciple of the Maharam of Rotenburg. So the Maharam of Rotenburg, we know the famous story, the Maharam was taken captive, right? And there was an incredible amount of money that was extorted from the Jewish community to go ahead and release the Maharam of Rotenburg. The Maharam instructed his community to not redeem him. He died in captivity, and they didn't release his body and his remains until 8 years after he died. So interestingly enough, the Rosh, they were about to seize his student as well. The Rosh somehow got tipped off, and he fled. So the Rosh writes over here, number four. He says very simply, Hakim shel korechu zecher lemikdash. So the truth is, says the Rosh, which is pretty obvious even in the wording that we say in the Haggadah itself, we don't actually do korech to fulfill any kind of halachic mandate, because I want to point something out over here. What's interesting is, when you read the Gemara, so the Gemara understands korech to be a satisfaction of a halachic obligation. So the Gemara, remember the flow. Hillel says you have to eat it as a sandwich. Chachamim say you could eat them each individually. So what does the Gemara say? Now that we don't resolve the dispute, we don't know, does the halacha follow Hillel? Does the halacha come? So what's the answer? Do both. Do both. So the Gemara understands that Korech is a part of a halachic resolution. What the Rosh is saying is that today, presently, in the absence of the Karban Pesach, we don't halachically have to do Korech. So why do, in fact, we engage in this process? Zecher LeMikdash. As a way of remembering that which was done in the temple 2,000 years ago. Now, what's interesting is the following. If you go with the Zecher LeMikdash approach, it actually creates a beautiful motif within the Seder. I mentioned this in one of the earlier shiurim. If you take a look at number 5. So remember, how does Magid start out? Magid begins, Halach ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'ara di Mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt. Kol dichven yeseh v'yechol, kol ditzrich yeseh v'yifsach. Whoever is needy, come and eat. Whoever is in need of a Pesach, come and join us for the Pesach. Hashat ha'ach l'sham babardi. So this year we're here, next year we're in Eretz. So this year we're servants, next year we're free. There are many different questions asked about this particular paragraph. Why is it in Aramaic, right? But most notably the question that comes up is, why are you making an invitation now? It's a strange invitation. We've already begun the Seder. We've already made Kiddush, right? We've already, remember, and the Seder, Kiddush is more than just Kiddush. It also represents the first of the four cups. So we've already begun the Seder process in its full entirety, and yet now, suddenly we're deciding to spontaneously invite company. But remember, who are you talking to? Right? The people are already there. So if you look at number 6, Rav Asher Weiss, In his commentary on the Haggadah, says something fascinating. He quotes the Yerushalmi, who explains, if you look in the right hand paragraph about 5 lines up from the bottom, Elo Boror Shibimekadem Hayumachrizim Hachraza Zu Baod Hayom Gadol. kol ot shelo nishchat ha-pesach, v'chol ot ha-anim adayin sovim mechutzos, ir levakish me'elachlam. So, interestingly enough, Rav Weiss explains that what happened on Erev Pesach in the times of the temple, people who had extra spots at their Pesach Seder table would go into the marketplace. And what would they announce? What would they announce? They would say, kol dichvin yesei v'yechol. Kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach. Remember, Pesach is one of those interesting times where you can't invite spontaneous company. Because remember, in order to partake of a Karban Pesach, you have to be part of a chabur. You have to be part of a group when? When? Before the Karban is shechted. Which means that before midday on Erev Pesach, you must already know where you're going to be spending Pesach Seder. So Rav Weiss points out, actually quotes Yerushalmi, that says that on Erev Pesach in the morning, the well-to-do people would walk into the marketplace, they would cry out in Aramaic, call out in Aramaic, who needs a Karban Pesach? Why in Aramaic? That was the vernacular. Right, that was the vernacular of the masses. So does anyone need a Karban Pesach? But speak up now. Because if you don't speak up now, then what? It's going to be too late. So Rav Weiss points out that why do we say this phrase in number 5 in Halach Ma'anya? It said, Zecher L'Chorban. Right? It's said in remembrance of what we lost. So what we use this same exact terminology, we use this same exact phrase that was said in the times of the temple, but guess, when do we say it? We say it now, after the Seder has already begun. We said it now after we've already begun the Seder process. Why? Is it a real invitation? No. What is it? It's Zecher L'Chorban. It's reminding us of what we lack. It's reminding us of the fact that, technically speaking, we could invite last-minute company now if we wanted to. Why? Because there is no Beis HaMikdash. And we use this same exact phraseology that was used to invite people to partake of the Karban Pesach during times of the Beis HaMikdash. So according to this approach, what really ends up happening is you have bookends of Zecher LeMikdash. Halach Ma'anya is the beginning of the Seder. It's the beginning of the Seder. Right? What is Korech? What is Korech? Right? Essentially, it's the end of Magid. Halach Ma'anya is the beginning of Magid, even though we say that, in the Simani HaSeder, we call it Magid, then Rachza, Motzi Matza, Moror, and Korech. But the truth is, everything until Shulchan Aruch, everything until the meal, is all what? It's all Magid. So in reality, according to this approach, what you have over here is the bookends of Magid are Zecher L'Chorban. We begin telling the Exodus narrative by recognizing that unfortunately we do not yet have our Beis HaMikdash, and we end the Magid with what? With the Korech sandwich of Hillel. For what purpose? Not a halachic purpose. But why? Zecher LeMikdash. So we're bookends, which is an incredible, incredible idea. We spoke about this a little bit last week as well, this dialectic that exists within Judaism. How on one hand, we could feel so exceptionally free, but yet what? But yet, feel like we are lacking so much. So I could be a Ben Chorin, I could be a free person, but at the same time I recognize that I'm not totally complete. So on the night that I'm going to feel totally free, I begin by remembering the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, and what? I'm going to end Magid, which is the major part of the Seder, Zecher L'Chorban as well, by ultimately partaking of the Hillel sandwich, which ultimately reminds me of what we have lost. It reminds me of the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. But is there a deeper meaning? So we can go with this approach, that really the essence of Korech, now since it's not a halachic obligation, is simply Zecher L'Chorban, creates a Zecher L'Chorban bookends. Beginning of Magid, end of Magid. Halach Ma'anya and Korech are the two ways that we remember the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. But is there some type of deeper symbolism, deeper mindset, deeper message that is present in Korech? So take a look at number 7. So the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, the Gra in his commentary on the Haggadah says something fascinating. He quotes here, the Gra, just so you should know in general, every Mefarish has his own type of style. The Gra was exceptionally terse. Meaning if you try to learn the Gra, so often, and that's true of the Gra's commentary on Shulchan Aruch as well as the Gra's other commentaries, the Gra will often quote to you a particular source and will say two words, and he expects you to figure out what he's talking about. There's only one problem. Is that we're not the Gra, right? So what's interesting, but it also happens to be, I think, part of his style is, I think we could all relate to this, sometimes the teachers that have the greatest impact on us are not the ones who spoon-feed us the information, but are the ones who challenge us to think. So I think it's part of what the Gruz methodology is also, that the Gruz does not believe in just laying it all out in front of you right here. He'll give you the source, he'll give you a couple of words, and then the goal is, go figure it out. So here's one of the interesting exceptions. Here the Gra is quite explicit in what he means. Take a look at number 7. Kach asa hilo bezmash v'sinish hayakayim hayakorich matzu maror. So he calls the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi in Meseches Chala. Hilo hazokin, I'm in the left-hand paragraph now in number 7. Hilo hazokin hayakorich shloshton ke'achos. So Hilo would put everything together. Right, would roll all of them together. Pesach matzah maror, perish Pesach matzah maror. Va'ochlin ke'achos, va'hayim ekayim ke'echad achilas Pesach, va'achilas matzah, va'achilas maror. And Hillel would fulfill all three of these mitzvos simultaneously. But here's the linchpin of Hillel's position: v'savar she'ein mevatlin ze et ze. But the reason why Hillel was able to do this was why? Because Hillel felt that what? The tastes do not negate one another. The tastes do not negate one another. So let me give you let's read on. He says, V'am Rabbi Yochanan, Cholkin al Hillel Azakin. And Rabbi Yochanan said, but the other rabbis disputed Hillel. Why? Perish the Rabbanon, Cholkin al V'savri, Shemivatlin Zezeh. The reason why the rabbis did not agree to Hillel's Korich is why? Because the rabbis felt that by going ahead and rolling everything together, what are you in essence doing? What are you doing? You're blunting the tastes of each individual item. The maror is not going to be as sharp if it's eaten with the matzah. The matzah is not going to be as bland if it's eaten with the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is not going to taste as succulent if it's eaten with the maror. So the Rabbanon, so according to the Gra, what's unfolding over here is the incredible idea. Is the incredible idea. That do the taste of that Gra, now the Gra saying is on a halachic level, that the fundamental dispute is that Hillel felt the tastes don't negate each other. Now, Hillel by himself couldn't make that up, but what Hillel's going to say is, look, that's the Torah says, Amatzos umerorim yochlu. So maybe the tastes do blunt each other, but clearly God doesn't care about that. The Chachamim say, no, you can't, you have to experience the tastes of each of these items separately, and if you put them all together, the tastes will blunt one another. On a deeper philosophical level. So I think, according to the Gra, what are they arguing about? What the Chachamim are really saying is that in order to appreciate freedom, what must you do? You must put bitterness behind you. If you go ahead and you taste freedom, if you taste Pesach, Matzah, together with Maror, that maror erodes the feelings of newfound freedom. Just like if you go ahead and you eat the Pesach and the Matzah with the maror, what does that do? That blunts the feelings of the pain of Egyptian servitude. So according to what the Rabbanon are really saying is that the essence of the Seder is to experience each of these phenomena separately. You have to experience servitude, you have to experience freedom, but you can't experience them together. Because if you experience them together, they will erode the other. They will erode each other. Freedom experienced with bitterness is not a full freedom. Bitterness experienced with freedom is not a full bitterness. Therefore, Chazal feel that you have to taste each of them separately. But interestingly enough, what does Hillel hold? Right? So Hillel, for some reason, holds that no. The essence is putting all of this together. The essence of Korich is that no, you should not go ahead and experience first slavery and then freedom and then a little bit more slavery. No, you have to experience all of them together. The question becomes, according to Hillel, why? Why? See, Chazal, the truth is the position of the rabbis is really understood. Because rabbis feel you should experience everything as a continuum. As a continuum, right? We begin by speaking about the servitude, then you're going to have some matzah. Now, remember, matzah is one of the, this is not a shir matzah, but the interesting part is, remember, matzah, what does matzah symbolize? Right. The good news is, whatever you guess is correct, right? Servitude, yes. Freedom, yes. A little bit of both, yes. It's everything. So you have matzah. Then you have maror, but really at the end of the day, what are you eating? What's the real afikoman? Karban Pesach. So the last taste in your mouth, the last taste in your mouth on the Seder night was the taste of freedom. The taste of freedom. And Chazal felt that's what you have to end the night with. You have to end the night feeling the flavor of freedom until the next morning. Until the next morning. Hillel, for some reason, says no. You shouldn't taste freedom by itself. You shouldn't taste servitude by itself. But rather, what should you do? You should go ahead and taste them all together. And interestingly enough, the imagery is very strong. And what are they all wrapped in? The bread that happens to represent both. The bread that represents freedom, the bread that represents servitude, is going to wrap up the Karban Pesach of freedom together with the Marah of servitude. And the question is, why? Why does Hillel feel the need that the Pesach experience has to be wrapped up, bundled all together? Why does he not subscribe to the idea of the rabbis to experience it as an ongoing continuum? So there are a couple of different approaches to this. Take a look at number eight. See, interestingly enough, this is a very beautiful piece by Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb. So Rabbi Lamb is the Rosh HaYeshiva and the Chancellor of Yeshiva University. So he wrote a number of beautiful essays on the Haggadah titled The Royal Table. So Rabbi Lamb writes the following. He says, 8a, in this age of polarization, it is important to point out the danger of too much of a good thing. What I plead for is that in any moral ethical problem, and life is full of them at every turn, we consider all values, both during and after the choice between competing values. Any one value when taken to an extreme can be corrupted. If we consider all positive values together, even if we must choose one over the other, there is less chance of debasing ourselves, our lives, or society. Letter B. We need a dialectic of virtues, a harmonization of competing goods. We need freedom and responsibility, peace and self-defense, love and morality, patience and toughness, discipline and independent thinking. Like Hillel, who would make a sandwich of matzah and bitter herbs and eat them together, we must manage to combine two different mitzvos, one bland and the other bitter, and not overdo either one at the total expense of the other. Letter C. Jewish life today must reveal that idea of balance, not overdoing things, of a Seder that comes to an end with the Afikoman. Religious perfectionism is a good thing. It means insistence upon more Torah, more observance of commandments, more morality. But religious perfectionism overdone could lead to an isolationism, the kind that characterizes too much of orthodoxy today. Too much of a good thing. This is too much of a good thing. And we are warned not to be too much of a tzaddik. At the same time, tolerance and understanding and acceptance of those different opinions are certainly virtuous. Without tolerance, society crumbles. But done to an extreme, these will lead to indifferentism, to deciding that it makes no difference what you believe, what you practice, what you do, what you want to do. This leads to the breakdown of Judaism. Instead, we must have a dialectic of various virtues and equilibrium between them, not going too far in either direction. So Rabbi Lamb seems, now again, although Rabbi Lamb does not directly address the matzah, maror, or Karban Pesach balance, but he understands the take-home message to be balance. Balance. That the entire essence of Korah is balance. Now, but let's plug this a little bit more into the Seder. I think what Rabbi Lamb is ultimately highlighting is that at the Seder, remember, you have two competing dynamics. On one hand, we do relive and we do reenact the servitude. And on the other hand, what do? We also reenact and relive our newfound freedom. So I think what Rabbi Lamb is saying is the essence of Korech is don't get too carried away with either dynamic. There are those who define themselves by their suffering, and there are those who define themselves by the ability to do whatever they want. Rabbi Lamb says that the essence of Hillel's message is that life, to borrow his terminology, has to be that dialectic of virtues. On one hand, we must always appreciate, understand, accept, and embrace the pain of the past, but we cannot allow the pain of the past to define us. On the other hand, we are free people and we must make the most of that freedom, but we should never take that freedom to an absurd extreme that ultimately would lead us to shed the yoke of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So where do we see this dialectic? Where do we see this balance? Korech. Korech. Because Korech is the one time in the Seder. Menachem, come in. Korech is the one time in the Seder. There are plenty of seats. Korech is the one... Korech is the one time in the Seder where ultimately we bring everything together. Until the point of Korech, we're actually looking at each thing in its own individual freeze frame. Korech, says Rabbi Lam, is the dialectic, is the balance. Saying life is all about finding what the Rambam calls the Derech HaMamutza, the middle ground. We appreciate freedom, but freedom to an extreme gets us in trouble. We have to always keep our suffering with us, but being defined by your suffering ultimately leads to life paralysis. So what is life all about? So this is very beautiful, because Rabbi Lam says essentially that Korech really becomes the paradigm for successful living. Korech really becomes the paradigm for leading a successful life, because it's taking everything in moderation, taking everything in right measure. That's our first approach, the dialectic of virtues. There's another approach. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Look, sometimes you have to say to yourself, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu. Look what a beautiful Torah we have. We're going to see Rabbi Lam, we're going to see Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, we're going to see everybody in between. So Rabbi Nachman says the following. Rabbi Nachman says that Rabbi Nachman, just so you should know, doesn't have a commentary on the Haggadah. Rabbi Nachman has one primary sefer that was written by his Talmud, Rabbi Nosson, with Likutei Moharan. So what happens over time, people have taken the different things from Rabbi Nachman's sefer, and they made a Haggadah out of it, they made a commentary on the Seder, but you could find the Breslov Haggadah, but it's Rabbi Nachman's teachings from elsewhere. So Rabbi Nachman says the following, number 9, Korech Matzu Umbaror, Zebechinas Eshumayim. So first off, if you study any of Rabbi Nachman's writings, you'll also know, Good luck. It's not always easy to decipher. Here it happens to be a little bit more understandable. So Rabbi Nachman says, you take matzah and maror. And he says, matzah and maror is like what? Bechinas eish umayim. Fire and water. Or in other words, he says, you're going to bring together opposites. Chesed ugivura. You're going to bring together kindness and ultimately midas hadin, strength. Yad yomin v'yad small. Hillel v'shamay. Bechinas machokas l'shem shamayim. V'alkein. Hillel Haya Karchan V'yachad, says Rabbi Nachman, you know why Hillel put everything together? Lohoros Shebe'emes Elu V'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Rabbi Nachman says something so profound. What is the most difficult theological reality that we encounter? The most difficult theological reality. That God is the cause of our suffering. God brings about suffering. I'm not trying to absolve man of man's responsibility, but ultimately, when bad things happen in this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows it to happen. Right? Because remember, if God doesn't want something to happen, it's not going to happen. Therefore, by definition, if it does happen, it must mean that it has the divine nod of approval. It doesn't mean God's happy with it. It doesn't mean God wants to do it. But at the end of the day, nothing goes down in this universe without the divine nod of approval. Says Rabbi Nachman, this is the most difficult theological concept for us to contend with. It's not only about why did the righteous suffer as opposed to the wicked. It's suffering in general. How do we understand, or how do we relate to a God who allows for suffering to occur? Now, what's the easiest resolution of that? The easiest resolution of that question? Sorry? Olam Haba. Good, good. What about an Olam Hazeh?
It's for our good, we just don't know.
It's for our good, simpler. This is what gave birth to the concept of dualism. Dualism means the simplest way to reconcile God's involvement with evil is to say, it wasn't God. It wasn't God. It wasn't God. There's a concept, dualism, as opposed to, let's say, polytheism, that believes in multiple gods, right? Dualism just means that, and by the way, this is a major tenet in Christianity, for example. In Christianity, you have the struggle between God and Satan. God and Satan. And if you look at much of Christian literature, it appears at least that this satanic figure has power. Has power, that he can do things either without the concept of God. But it seems to me that there are two forces to contend with. There's God and there's Satan. And, you know, the question is, who's going to have the upper hand? That's the easiest way to deal with the question, because then what essentially it does is it removes evil from the purview of God. Then it's not a... God is good. And it's all good. And when something bad happens, that's some other entity. Rabbi Nachman says, we don't believe that. We believe that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Does that create difficulties for us in life when we suffer, when we encounter tragic circumstances? Yes, it creates very difficult realities. We wonder to ourselves, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you love me so much, then why are you letting this happen to me? If you love me so much, then why, to borrow the words of David HaMelech, Keili, Keili, lama azavtani? Why do I feel all alone if you're supposed to take care of me? But just because it's difficult intellectually to absorb this reality does not give us the license to negate its truth. Says Rabbi Nachman something amazing. That's the essence of Korech. He says, you know, we spend the Seder night highlighting the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt. But there's something just as important, which is God put us in Egypt also. Which means that when the Jewish babies were thrown into the Nile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed, again, remember, the Egyptians have responsibility for what they did, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in those circumstances. When they built our children into bricks because we couldn't come up with the tally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed for those circumstances. Says Rabbi Nachman, if we are going to have a full theological experience in the Leil HaSeder, we have to accept the God who took us out, but we also have to accept and embrace the God who put us there as well. Says Rabbi Nachman, that's the imagery in Korech. So what do? We take the matzah, and we roll together the Karban Pesach, which represents freedom, together with the maror, that represents servitude, and we roll them all together in one Pesach wrap to highlight the idea that we accept the fact that all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that everything comes from the same God, and we accept, just like we accept His salvation, sometimes we're also called upon to accept the difficulties and the tragedies that He visits upon us as well. Again, it doesn't make it easier, it doesn't take away the questions, but from a theological perspective, we must accept that it is one God who truly orchestrates all of the events, both the salvations as well as the tragedies of our existence. That's Rabbi Nachman. Take a look at number 10. We're gonna throw out a couple of suggestions, and then we're gonna, no pun intended, wrap them all together towards the end. I couldn't resist that. Okay, so take a look at number 10. Thank you for laughing at that, by the way. I appreciate it. You're good people. All right, let's take a look at number 10. Yes.
When something bad happens to people, a lot of people say it's a kapara for something that could have happened worse than what's happening. So when we say that, kind of accept what Hashem has given us by saying those words.
That, right. If a person believes that, a person accepts that 100%, it could be, I don't know. I don't know the cheshbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as to why He brings about certain things, but if that's what helps a person deal with a tragedy, good. Take a look at number 10. The Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi is, now just to understand, also Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, not the Rav, he's the great-grandfather of the Rav. Right, the Rav's grandfather's father. So the Beis HaLevi says something amazing over here. The Beis HaLevi writes, it's such a fascinating, the truth is, you know, as I was looking over the shir, I realized we really could just do an entire shir on this Beis HaLevi, but we'll just spend a couple of moments on it. So Beis HaLevi writes, look, by letter A is just quoting the Haggadah, and letter B says, Isav HaMedrash. The Medrash in Eicha Rabbah quotes a pasuk from Eicha, he's bi'ani bamrorim, Hirvani la'ana. So I quoted the pasuk for you in number 11. It's a pasuk from the third chapter of Eicha. Literally, hispi'ani bamrorim. He has filled me with bitterness. Hirvani la'ana. He has sated me with wormwood. Wormwood is wood filled with worms.
No.
So,
no, in
this case, Rashi actually refers to the fact that it's talking about wood that's filled with worms that would have been possible for the ma'aracha. It would not have been fit for the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, at least in this context. I don't know, maybe it has different meanings in different situations. So he says the following. He says, Mashish bi'ani bamrorim, I'm sorry, so look at the first line by letter B. Isa b'medrash quotes the pasuk, Mashish bi'ani bamrorim, when did God fill me with bitterness? Belele Pesach. That's the night of Pesach. Hirvani la'ana, when did He sate me with wormwood? Belel Tisha B'Av. night of Tisha B'Av. So the Medrash says, when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu fill me with bitterness? That's the night of Pesach. And when did he sate me with wormwood? That is the night of Tisha B'Av. So the Beis Halevi explains, so what's the connection? Right? What's the connection? So the truth is, the simple connection, says the Beis Halevi, is we know that the same night of the week that Pesach falls out, the first Seder is the same night of the week that Tisha B'Av falls out. Right? That's why, interestingly enough, we know that many have the custom at the beginning of Shulchan Orech to eat eggs. To eat eggs, hard-boiled eggs. Why hard-boiled eggs? Because again, that's a food of Avelus. So what does that do with Pesach? It doesn't have to do with the Pesach. It has to do with the calendrical connection between Pesach and Tisha B'Av. So simple answer might just be that the Medrash is equating these two nights because again, they fall out on the same night of the week. Says Beis Halevi, the Medrash must be saying something deeper. Skip down to letter C. Look what he says over here. He says, "Ubederach Hadrush Ef Shalomar." The Pesach dino lios ne'achal al hasova umevor bepsachim duhu kedei sheyishar tam Pesach befiv. So we know that interestingly enough, the Korban Pesach was not necessarily the main part of the meal. Meaning, when there was a Beis Hamikdash, you brought shalmei chagiga. Shalmei chagiga were animals that are brought as offerings that gave you meat for Pesach for your Yom Tov meal. You ate the Korban Pesach essentially al hasova. Al hasova, I mean, we call it for dessert. But it means is after you were already satiated, you went ahead and you ate of this Korban Pesach. Why? Because as we said before, so it should be Tam Pesach Befiv. We want the last taste that you have in your mouth to be the Korban Pesach. And he goes on, V'yish lomar, ha-kavona bazeh, de-balayla zeh, in paragraph C, second line, de-balayla zeh, osin zikaron le-bei zvaran hufachim. So this is basically what's interesting about the Leila Seder is we make a remembrance for two opposite dynamics. There are things that we do on that night to remember our freedom. And there are other things that remind us of our servitude, like mar and charoses. V'tzarech liyos tam Pesach nishar befev lahoros shemikan ve'elech hischil acherus. So the Beis Halevi writes, as we said before, that Pesach is, to borrow by Lamb's terminology, is that dialectic of virtues. That on one hand, we recognize or we commemorate our servitude, but we also go ahead and celebrate our freedom. Now the interesting part is, both of those dynamics were experienced on the same night. Because on the night of Pesach, we were still technically what? We were still technically slaves. But it was also that very night, after Makas Bechoros, that Paro says, get out, and we're free. So on one night, we're slaves and we're free men, says the Beis Halevi. That's the dynamic of the Seder. That's why we have remembrances of our servitude, but we also have aspects that relate to our freedom. But yet, the last thing we have in our mouth is the taste of what? The taste of freedom. Because from that night, from the end of the night and on, we were free. We had no vestige of servitude. And by paragraph D now. So says the Beis Halevi, this makes sense according to the rabbis who say that what? That you eat each item separately. Then it makes sense. You're going to eat the matzah, which as we said, goes both ways. You're going to eat the mar, which represents servitude. Okay, and now servitude is over. What do you eat next? Korban Pesach. That makes sense. It's a continuum. He says, however, listen to this. Aval Hillel, but according to Hillel, Hayikorich Pesach Matzu Maror, V'nimtza Dilididei Hayukulam Ne'echalam Ala Sova. But interestingly enough, according to Hillel, everything was eaten together. Ulich Ora Mai Shayich B'Maror Lios Ne'echa Ala Sova, Dilama Lo Lios Nishatamo Befiv, V'Hari Meriros Shalashibut Kvar Chala V'Avarlo V'Eino Od Ne'ata. So basically, makes an amazing observation. According to, if you go with Hillel's model that you're eating everything together, what's the last taste you're going to have in your mouth for the night? A little bit of everything. So you're going to have some Korban Pesach, but what else are you going to have? You're going to have some maror in your mouth as well. But says the Beis Halevi, why in the world on the night of Pesach would Hillel want us to have a little bit of mariros, a little bit of bitterness in our mouth? And the Beis Halevi says something amazing. He says, Rak Kevan, Dehava az be'emtza hazman, v'chol ha'geula haya al smach sheyihyu od begalus acher mishum hachi tzorech sheyihye nishartam o befiv. So the amazing part, says the Beis Halevi, is because Hillel understood that we are not out of the woods yet. that there is still more difficulty to come. To go ahead and just end the night with the taste of Karban Pesach in our mouth is a little bit disingenuous, and maybe even a little bit delusional, because we don't yet have the full unadulterated taste of freedom, because there are difficulties and dark times and challenges still ahead of us. So we have to taste some freedom, definitely, but we also have to have a little tinge of what? A little tinge of maror to remind us that there are still turbulent times ahead of us. Now you have to also appreciate that if you understand Hillel's historical context, it makes so much more sense as well. Hillel is living during exceptionally difficult times. As I mentioned before, so Hillel's living there in the time of Herod. Was Herod a good man or a bad man? The truth is, it depends on the day, right? So Hillel one day will wipe out the entire Sanhedrin, which he virtually did, and on the next day he'll rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So Rabbi, he's living during the times of the Netzivim, the Roman procurators, who extorted all of the wealth from Judea, were terribly oppressed. They just wanted to take all the Jewish wealth away. So Hillel's living in the middle of a time, and Hillel sees the writing on the wall. Hillel realizes now that this second temple is not going to endure. And he also knows that what? Unlike after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, where the prophet himself assured us that the exile will only last for 70 years, the exile that will follow the destruction of the second temple is indefinite. We don't know. So Hillel sees darkness in the distance. And therefore Hillel feels that we have to go ahead and our Pesach must reflect that. We must celebrate the incredible freedom we have achieved, but don't let people go to bed just with the taste of Pesach in their mouth, because they're going to think then that everything's okay, but everything's not okay. Everything's not okay. There is difficulty ahead of us. There is tragedy ahead of us. We have to celebrate the redemption of Egypt, but wrap everything together. This way, when you go to sleep at night, yes, you put your head on the pillow with the incredible succulent taste of Karban Pesach freedom, but you also, your mouth burns just a little bit from the difficulty and bitterness of Maror, a reference and a foreshadowing to the difficult times ahead. That's the Beis HaLevi. One more. Take a look at number 12. So we come now to our last approach, which I think will ultimately allow us to bring all of the other approaches together. So here's what's interesting. So Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, in his commentary on the Haggadah, writes the following. He says, so he quotes over here in letter A, it appears that there was a difference of opinion between Hill and his contemporaries as to whether the matzah and maror should be eaten separately or together. The view that they should be eaten separately holds that these are distinctive commands, neither of which should diminish or detract from the other. Matzah symbolizes freedom, maror represents slavery, they have different tastes, they are opposite experiences, they do not belong together. That's just like the Gra, like the Vilna Gaon that we saw before, the Yerushalmi. Letter B. Hillel, however, thought otherwise, and out of respect for his opinion, we do as he did as well. Hillel was guided by his understanding of the biblical verse that one should eat the Paschal offering with matzos and bitter herbs, suggesting that all three be eaten together. Perhaps, too, he was reminding us of the Jewish experience of history. Within the bitterness of slavery, there was also the hope and promise of freedom. Within freedom, we are also commanded each year to never to forget the taste of slavery, so that we should not take liberty for granted, nor forget those who are still afflicted. So I think that this idea, Rabbi Sacks, specifically this last idea, is so profound. That what is Hillel saying? That as we sit at our Seder table and celebrate our freedom, we must never lose sight of the fact that what? There are others who are still suffering in servitude. So how could I possibly have the chutzpah to just eat Karban Pesach all by itself? Because to eat Karban Pesach all by itself would paint a picture that everything is fine. See, it's interesting, because like the Beis HaLevi understood also that Korich represents the idea that everything is not fine, but the Beis HaLevi was more future-oriented, that there are still difficulty and turbulent chapters ahead of us. Rabbi Sacks saying it's not about the future. What is it about? It's about the present. So when I sit down to eat my Karban Pesach, even if I am privileged enough to lead a privileged life, that everything is good, that I have a Karban Pesach existence, just understand that there are a lot of people living in maror. There are a lot of people who are up to their necks in Mara. A lot of people have exceptionally difficult life circumstances. And I may not celebrate my Pesach in a vacuum. My Pesach experience must be reflective of what the collective is experiencing. And if not all of us are eating Karban Pesach, then guess what? Then no one has the right to only Karban Pesach. So what does Hillel do? He puts everything together. So again, that the succulent freedom of my Pesach is blunted or is tempered by the bitterness of the maror of those around me. Interestingly enough, remember how we said before, according to our first approach, a simple approach of the Rush, who understood that the whole Korech dynamic is really bookends with Halach Ma'anya. Right? Both of them are Zecha L'Chorban. So the truth is, we can make the same suggestion over here according to Rabbi Sacks. They're also bookends, but in a different way. Take a look at number 13. So this is a very profound piece as well. This is Rabbi Sacks is commenting over here by Halach Ma'anya. So he writes the following. This is a strange invitation. So if you skip down a little bit, he says, this strange invitation. This is the bread of affliction which our ancestors ate in Egypt. Let all that are hungry come and eat. What hospitality is it to offer the hungry the taste of suffering? In fact, though this is a profound insight into the nature of slavery and freedom, as noted above, matzah represents two things. It's the food of slaves. All right, he goes on. What transforms the bread of affliction into the bread of freedom is the willingness to share it with others. Look at letter B. This is quite amazing. Primo Levi was a survivor of Auschwitz. In his book, If This Is a Man, he describes his experiences there. According to Levi, the worst time of all was when the Nazis left in January 1945, fearing the Russian advance. All prisoners who could walk were taken on the brutal death marches. The only people left in the camp were those who were too ill to move. For 10 days, they were left alone with only scraps of food and fuel. Levi describes how he worked to light a fire and bring some warmth to his fellow prisoners, many of them dying. He then writes, letter C, when the broken window was repaired and the stove began to spread its heat, something seemed to relax in everyone. At that moment, Towarowski, a Franco-Pole of 23, proposed to the others that each of them offer a slice of bread to us three who had been working. And so it was agreed. Letter D. Only a day before, a similar event would have been inconceivable. The law of the lager. Lager is a concentration camp. The law of the lager said, eat your own bread, and if you can, that of your neighbor. And left no room for gratitude. It really meant that the law of the lager was dead. Letter E. It was the first human gesture that occurred among us. I believe that that moment can be dated as the beginning of the change by which we who had not died slowly changed from prisoners to men again. Sharing food is the first act through which slaves become free human beings. One who fears tomorrow does not offer his bread to others. But one who is willing to divide his food with a stranger has already shown himself capable of fellowship of faith, the two things from which hope is born. That is why we begin the Seder by inviting others to join us. Bread shared is no longer the bread of affliction. Reaching out to others, giving help to the needy and companionship to those who are alone, we bring freedom into the world, and with freedom, God. So according to Rabbi Sacks, something beautiful occurs over here. How do we begin the Seder? We begin the Seder how? By reaching out to others. By reaching out to others. If not literally, at least symbolically. Kol dichtin yesei veyecho. You want to know how I'm a free man? What distinguishes a slave from a free person? A slave is totally preoccupied with what?
Survival.
With survival. A slave could only focus on survival. A free man has the ability to focus on his life and the life of others. So the first thing we do in the Haggadah Halach Ma'anyo is we reach out to others. The greatest manifestation of freedom is my ability to connect and to think about the feelings and the needs of the collective. And how do we end Magid? According to Rabbi Sacks, with Korech as well. And what does Korech represent? Korech represents that I'm not going to live my life with blinders. That I'm not going to live my life just fully ensconced and fully holed up in my own little personal utopia. I'm going to recognize that even if Baruch Hashem, I'm privileged that my life is perfect, that it's wonderful, that everything is great, I have to recognize that that is not the predicament for so many around me. We're not talking even about doing anything about that right now. We're just talking about the realization that a person lives outside of their own peripheral worldview and that a person feels connected to the Judaic collective. That's Korech. See, even if I'm just a Korban Pesach Jew, everything is good, I have to slip in there a little bit of Maror to remind myself of the difficulties of all of those around us. Interestingly enough, what it comes down to, according to Rabbi Sachs, is really one of the mainstays of the Seder is proclaiming our care and concern for others. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're actually doing anything that night, but at the Leil HaSeder, when we are experiencing, or we are reliving, or we are celebrating our newfound freedom, we almost have to make our declaration of our statements of principles of belief. And what are some of our major principles of belief? That we don't live for ourselves, that we don't exist in a bubble, that we must be there for our fellow Jews, for our fellow members of Klal Yisrael, that just because everything is fine in my life does not give me a license to recede from the difficult circumstances of those around me. And interestingly enough, look at number 14. So what do we say in Pirkei Avos? Hillel Omer. Hillel himself said, Hevi mi tamidav shel Aaron, be of the disciples of Aaron, Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, be a lover of peace, pursuer of peace. So of course we know everybody loves peace. Who doesn't love peace? But the real test is, are you a pursuer of peace? Because most times peace doesn't show up at your doorstep. So the question is, am I willing to take the necessary difficult steps to find that peace? Ohev es habrios, love people, and thereby makarvan Torah, bring them close to Torah. So says Rav Aaron Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in his commentary on Agada number 15, something beautiful. Zecher LeMikdash KeHillel, Rav Kuk writes, Midaso shel Hillel, HaOhev VeHarodev Shalom. Who was Hillel? Hillel was a lover of peace, a pursuer of peace. Ohev es habrios, umakarvan laTorah. He loved people, brought them close to Torah. L'mishmeres HaKodesh, tashuv eleinu. Halevai, says Rav Kook, it should come back to us. So Rav Kook says that, again, really echoing the same sentiment as Rabbi Sachs, that part of the essence of Korech is to be Hillel-like. The wrapping together of the Pesach, Matzah, and Maror in Hillel's worldview represented a bringing together of all the different aspects that exist within our relative lives, within the Jewish community. So we can't just be, I'm a Korban Pesach, so I'm over here, you're a Maror, you're over there, you're a Matzah, you're over there. No. Everybody has to come together. We have to learn to not just be provincial Judaic individuals, but we must learn to somehow exist for the entire collective. This becomes the essence of the Seder. Part of becoming free means graduating from becoming an individual to becoming a member, a productive and caring member of the Klal, of the collective. And I think if we put this all together, this last approach could actually really encompass all the other ones. How? So the truth is, if we accept this idea that the message of Korech really is that it teaches us the need to unite, the need to go ahead and recognize that even if we are free, there are others who might not be free. The need to recognize that even if I'm in one place, there might be someone else who's somewhere else, but I have an obligation to reach out and to connect with as many members of the Jewish people as I possibly can. If the message of Korech is ultimately to unite, to come together and find common ground, see, interestingly enough, we now understand all the other approaches. Because it's only by coming together, it's only by uniting as a people, it's only by taking off our blinders and becoming part of the collective that, number one, we could become part of that dialectic of virtues, of Rabbi Lam's approach. Here's the interesting part, is that no man is an island. No person has every midah, no person has every characteristic, no one individual could be the dialectic of virtues that Rabbi Lam discussed. But you know what the amazing part is? When you join as part of the collective, suddenly my weaknesses are bolstered by your strengths. Suddenly, my skills are able to offset your deficiencies, right? Suddenly, we realize that we're able to so beautifully complement each other, and together, again, one more time, we become, according to Rabbi Lam, that dialectic of virtues, recognizing that everyone brings something different and unique to the collective table. It's only by uniting, coming together, that we could accept Rabbi Nachman's idea, that we could accept the difficult gezeros that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts upon us. Like Rabbi Nachman says, we have to accept that not only the salvation comes from God, but the difficulty comes from God. Well, you know what? It's very difficult to accept God's punishments, and it's very difficult to accept God's strict justice if you're alone. The only type of nechama we have for the difficulties and tragedies in life is when we are together. When we stand together as an am, when we can lean on one another, then we truly have the ability to go ahead and even accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's harsher judgments upon us. It's only by standing together that we see the Beis Halevi, that we could face the uncertainties of the future. Remember the Beis Halevi, right? Why did Hillel put in Mara there? Because it's not all good. There's difficulty coming down. So you ever wonder, you know, the truth is, the uncertainties of life are a paralyzing thing, because you never know what the day is going to bring. You never know what's going to happen. So how does a person have the courage to put their foot outside the door? And the answer is, because we're not alone. Because we don't have to do anything in this world as individuals. We don't have to do anything by ourselves. We have the merit to be part of something beautiful and magnificent called the Jewish people. So what's really beautiful is, really, if we take this last approach, it encompasses everything. So what is the message of Korech? So first, I want to make a disclaimer. In no way in 1 hour, 1 hour and 5 minutes. In no way in a little bit more than 1 hour did we cover the entirety of Korech. But at least it gives us an approach. If we take this last, the essence of Korech is that even if I'm a Karban Pesach Jew and my life is all Karban Pesach, I must recognize and embrace the fact that there's so much maror around me, and I must put my matzah arms around the maror that is around me. I must try to go ahead and make a difference in the suffering and the difficulties and the tragedies and the challenges of others. And it's only by doing that, that again, one more time, we become the dialectic of virtues. Only by that do we each realize the beautiful gifts that we each bring to the collective table. Only by coming together can we face the difficult gezeros that HaKadosh Baruch Hu levies upon us. And only by coming together can we face the incredible uncertainties that plague our personal and national existence. So it's really beautiful, and with this we'll end. Because according to Hillel, really what happens over the course of the Seder is we commit ourselves to one another. And what we ultimately recognize is that to be free, in essence, means to be eternally bound to our fellow Jew. All right, we'll stop over here.